getting comfortable.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy basketball analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Today we are helping you get ready for your fantasy basketball drafts if they haven't occurred already. This sort of ties into the show I did on Monday talking about how to draft in snake drafts, and that's looking at the idea of statistical or categorical scarcity in your leagues, which is, again, applicable to head-to-head leagues and to roto leagues, anything that applies to categories. This has no impact on points leagues, where, again, you're just looking for the guy who's got to project to score the most fantasy points per game. We're looking at categorical scarcity across the most common standard categories in head-to-head and roto leagues. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
To talk about the categorical scarcity and statistical scarcity across your general player pool for a standard draft, I am joined by Basketball Monster's own Matt Smith. Matt, welcome back.
Josh, thank you for having me on. And yeah, this is one of my favorite fantasy basketball topics. So yeah, hopefully this will be a really informative podcast, and we're diving deep into the strategy section of the fantasy basketball handbook, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is exactly. It is to do with strategy. Now, I bang on about it all the time. You talk about it as well, Matt. Is if you're looking in a draft, if you've got a list of rankings in front of you, here's my top 200, and you go in and tick a guy off and just take the next one on that list, you're going to lose because there are things that influence that. Now, we can go out and project players, and we do, and we project all their statistical numbers, and they get their standard scores, and that gets averaged, and it gets put into a list because as humans, we're naturally attracted towards lists. But the value of one stat at a certain point in the draft might be different to the value of that stat at a different point in the draft. So reaching or grabbing a guy because that stat is starting to run off the board, and you would have heard me talk about this in nearly every mock draft that I did, is super important. So Matt, yeah, when we talk categorical scarcity, what are we really looking at here in terms of, yeah, did I cover everything there in terms of the concept of categorical scarcity?
I think so. So those who listen to our positional tiers podcast, at that point, we're looking at players of a similar overall value based on their positions and what positions you need to find at certain points in the draft and what's still available later on. This time, we're looking at the stats or the categories. So what category do you need to find now and what is still available later on in the draft? So for me, I understand why you would target, you know, a pure three-point shooter early when we know that three-point category is the most readily available category either A later in drafts or off the waiver wire. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and what's available. But yeah, it's all about, you know, what category do I need to target now and what's going to be available later on in my draft.
So say, for example, with that, when you look at a guy in a projected value, Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns, and Steph Curry, are all projected pretty similar in terms of the overall value, or as some people like to say, in a vacuum or all things being equal, which of course they never are. Yeah, their value is equal, but Steph's value is derived from the fact that he's hitting a lot of threes. That is one of his number one categories. And as we said, you can find those three-pointers a lot later in the drafts. That's where these three-point specialist-type players come in. So I think the fact that when you go through drafts and you see that categories like assists and points, and obviously Steph helps you in points as well, they fly off the board early. When you see things like rebounds start to disappear in the mid-portions of the draft, those things become more important, because if you don't get them, it's not like, well, I'll just grab this guy here because he's got equal value, but then how am I going to fill up these other categories later? Because the answer to that is you can't.
Exactly. And I wrote an article about this for Basketball Monster, and all the members have been reading it and checking it out. And I guess what I looked at is last season, I broke it down into 25 players at a time. This time, I wanted to narrow it down a little bit further. I looked at doing, you know, it in rounds of 12. But I guess at the end of the first round, we've got so many players who can go in that late first, early second round. So I did extend it to 15 players for each section and the top 60 overall. Now, the article itself is far from bulletproof. What I did is I looked at basically the first 15 players who were ranked from our projections, and then the next 15, and then the next 15, and the next 15 after that. So obviously in your drafts, they're not going to go in that particular order, but it was just to give an example of how quickly categorical scarcity changes and where it changes. So straight off the top, when we're looking at a standard league, assists and threes were the easiest categories to find throughout the draft. Field goal percentage, blocks, and rebounds were the hardest, but that changes really, really quickly after the top 15 players have gone off the board.
I don't know if you're still there, Matt, but you just dropped out. Oh, yeah, there you go, you're back.
Cool. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Sorry, but you were talking about how those categories, threes, assists, and steals, stay at the top of your draft, how they're the most available early on, but then that does change.
Yeah, that's right. And so, for instance, if we do look at after the top 15 players have gone off the board, points go from a category that can be found to the hardest category to find. Of the 19 of the top 25 players we have projected in points per game, they'll be drafted in the first two rounds. So once you get outside that top 25, points are extremely difficult to find. Assists and steals also take a big hit. So those first two rounds we know are really guard heavy with your Hardens, Curry's, Lillard's, Beal, Booker, Trae Young, Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, these sort of guys. So the guard stats, the points, the steals, the threes, the assists, they change significantly after the top 25 players have been drafted.
Yeah, and that's important to know. Like, you go into your draft tracker on Basketball Monster and you take a look and you see that, you know, the bright green is there for steals. It's bright green for assists, meaning, well, you go, well, look at me. That means that these categories like assists and steals become easy to find. But the first 10 guys, first 15 guys go off the board and that changes. That's because those top players, they're all the ones who score. They're the guys who get those assists. So those things change quite a bit. It says blocks are quite scarce to begin the draft, but because a lot of the high block guys aren't going in that first round, they do become a little bit easier to find as the draft does continue. So it is important to know where these drop-offs occur, where these changes and where these stats are really concentrated in terms of average draft position of players. Because if you don't get points early, man, if you get a guy in the second round like Andre Drummond, or you get Rudy Gobert, or you grab Draymond Green in round three, you are so far behind the eight ball there in terms of points that finding that guy to catch you back up later becomes really, really difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where player value can actually adjust during the draft. So if you have struggled early in points, you might have to go then a little bit earlier on someone like DeMar DeRozan.
Yep.
Because after the top 60 players have gone off the board, points is, like I said, far and away the hardest category to find. So all of a sudden, yes, we know he has his limitations and he doesn't hit three-pointers, but like I said, you can find that later in the draft. So his 20 points per game and his 4 to 5 rebounds and his 4 to 5 assists and all of a sudden become very useful and valuable, because there aren't any other players like him outside that top 50. So DeMar DeRozan can actually get a boost up and his stats become more valuable because there's no one else out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like these points, like the 30-point per game guys, your Hardens and your Currys and your 28 guys like your Devin Booker maybe, or Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like once those guys are gone, like the average in a solid fantasy basketball team, your team's averaging 15 to 17 points per game. That's sort of around the area you're looking to target to be okay in that area. But those 27-point, 28-point per game guys, there's 5 of them, 8 of them maybe, and once they're gone, they're gone, and they get distributed amongst 7 or 8 teams. If you can get 2 of those players, that is why Devin Booker's value is pushed up so high, because if you can pair him with another, you know, high-scoring guy, then your points are sitting at a very high level, and that enables you to be not only competitive, but dominant over other people, and then concentrate on those other areas later on. So we see points go off the board really early. The next thing we seem to see go off is assists, and that's why the value of guys like Trae Young, like Booker to an extent, like Jrue Holiday, Jimmy Butler, D'Angelo Russell, Kemba Walker, all of these players, their value is inflated, and I think taking them higher than those areas where you may expect them to be is necessary, because it's harder to find those numbers later on. And you might say, well, you'll find Jeff Teague later, you might get Ricky Rubio later, and that's all fine, but are you going 20 spots higher to make sure you grab that guy? Or, you know, you're sitting there and you pick at the turn, and then you've got to wait 24 picks until it's your next one. Well, it takes one person to go in and grab that guy, and then you don't have assists, and you can't compete in that category. So we see points go off first. That's the one that really drops off early. Assists is probably the next one that drops. And something that surprised me over the course of doing these mock drafts, Matt, is the way that rebounds actually do tend to fall off. And in the past, you could, I'll grab a cheap big man later. It isn't really seeming to be the case this season, and rebounds become quite hard to recover from later in the draft.
They do, and that's a really good point, and one I was going to make. But yeah, once we get sort of outside that top 100 and you get past guys like JaVale McGee, Kevon Looney, Zach Collins, like maybe Alex Len is probably the last of the big men. Like, I've been doing some deep drafts this season, and rebounds are so tough to find later on, really struggling. So, you know, like we said in our podcast series, like those big men in that sort of third, sixth to seventh round, all of a sudden they're becoming really valuable for their rebounds. But just to circle back on assists, and your point was perfect. Assists are so difficult to find. We don't have Russell Westbrook, John Wall, James Harden, Chris Paul, who are going to average 10 plus assists this season. Trae Young is the main man for assists. We have him projected as leading the league in assists this season, and that's why I've been targeting him so heavily in that second round, because I want those elite assists. After that, we've got LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Ben Simmons. But yeah, those assists are so valuable. And Ricky Rubio was the other guy I had on my list to talk about. Is once again, after that top 50, Jeff Teague, who are probably the only two guys who are going to get you 6+ assists per game. So once again, we know Ricky Rubio has his limitations and his deficiencies, but his big boost in assists, once again, like a DeMar DeRozan, is going to give him a boost up the draft board. And you might need to go around earlier just to secure those elite assists.
Same thing goes for Lonzo Ball, who's ridiculously ranked low at like 91 over on Yahoo. But if he can get you 7 or 8 assists per game, and yeah, you can deal with those other issues, because you can fill out the percentages in other areas, especially the field goal percentage. That is, as we haven't discussed, but we will discuss that the field goal percentage, you can get some influence in that area later in the draft as well as free throw percentage. In the past, that hasn't necessarily been the case, but that is a little bit more of the case this season. You can grab a late Montrezl Harrell, you can grab a Lou Williams for field goal and free throw percentage respectively. You can find those guys. You can find Dwayne Dedmon to be a bit of an influencer in those percentage categories as you get further in the draft. So you're getting these numbers, which again, points, then assists go, and then rebounds tend to go. We've got a sweet spot sort of between 60 and 90 where a lot of the steals guys tend to be concentrated as well. So if you haven't got steals early, you need to know where you can get them later on. And the blocks one is interesting, because there are some players you can get late that do help you in blocks that I think devalue some of these guys that you might tend to reach for. Maybe that is a Mitch Robinson or a Miles Turner, if you're reaching for them into the top 25 because of their blocks. Perhaps, yeah, that's overvaluing that contribution in that category when you can find some of those other guys later, and it's going to cause you to be deficient in some other areas.
Definitely. I'd just like to circle back on that, on your steals comment as well. And I've got two guys who are projected inside the top 50 who probably get a bump backwards, because they are so good in a couple of areas, which you can find later. So I've spoken about DeMar DeRozan and Ricky Rubio, how they get the bump. Otto Porter is one in particular who probably gets a little bit of a bump down. We spoke about him in our podcast tiers as well, because he doesn't do anything particularly well, doesn't give you a massive boost in one or two areas, so he's more suited to the rotisserie format. But his major advantage for one category is steals. And like you said, we can find some steals players sort of through those mid rounds. So we've got De'Aaron Fox and Otto Porter overall value and projected in the same area. Fox we have at 1.8, steals Otto Porter we have at 1.6. But like we said, those assists are so difficult to find that I would draft De'Aaron Fox 10 out of 10 times over Otto Porter because of those assist boosts. And with the steals and threes, we can look at guys later on, like who we mentioned, Mikal Bridges or Miles Bridges, Josh Richardson, Kelly Oubre, and Gary Harris are just some of the guys later on who can give you that advantage in steals. So Otto Porter's one guy inside that top 50 who I just don't feel as though we should be reaching for at the stage. He'll finish a top 50 player, no doubt. But based on categorical scarcity, some of those other players, like a De'Aaron Fox, become more valuable at that range.
Yeah, that's true as well. And we can talk about he'll finish as a top 50, but as I've said plenty of times, like these overall rankings, they help us deal with our fact that we like things in lists, but they don't actually mean anything at that point. Well, I drafted him at 50 and he finishes the 50th best player, therefore it was the right pick. But who did you miss out on in that area? Could you have filled in that other category that he gives that boost on in another spot as well? And don't even get me started on including turnovers in those ranks, because they mean absolutely nothing. And again, if you're looking at turnovers in your overall ranking numbers, then that bumps your assist projection for those players right down, and you're just not going to be able to be competitive in assists. If you're putting turnovers in, going off a list, your assist guys go all the way down, you're going to miss out on all of them, and then you're not going to be able to compete in that area. And that's fine. If you want to punt that category, then you almost have no choice to punt it if you are including turnovers in your valuations of players. Matt, the three-pointer one is really important. Now, we did an article on Basketball Monster about who we pick at number one, and James Harden was the name that came up quite a bit there. He has been obviously putting up some big numbers in preseason. In limited minutes, it is preseason, but it's just carrying over what he did. But one of his strong categories is threes. So does that fact that you can get those threes later on maybe make you want to go in a different direction there? Get a guy like Towns or who help you in those rebound numbers, or Davis who gets some blocks and rebounds there as well. Would that change that decision, or is Harden just that far ahead for you that you wouldn't make that decision?
I'm still pretty comfortable with James Harden as number one. Once again, for the assist and steals fact, and I love building around an elite point guard. Like I said, that's why I've been targeting Trae Young in that second round. But once again, just when we look at overall build, if I can get Harden at sort of 1, 2, 3, and then I know in that next range I can get someone like a DeAndre Ayton, who I would target, maybe pair that with a Luka Doncic, and then in that fourth and fifth round, we've got Thomas Bryant, Jonas Valanciunas, for Derek Favors, maybe Bam falls, maybe Clint Capella falls. So I think in that sort of fourth, fifth round, I can really target a couple of bigs and give my rebounds and blocks a boost in that way. So I'm still quite comfortable with James Harden at one, with Towns and probably Davis at 2 and 3. And the point you made on threes as well, the other player I was going to bring up was Buddy Hield. He had a fantastic season last year and jumped from, that player from the 70-80 range into the top 50. But once again, if we look at his projections this season, his number one category by so far is 3 points per game. We've got him projected at 3.7 threes per game. And once again, you need to ask yourself, do you really want to draft a player in the fourth or fifth round when you can find that category at the end of the draft? Guys like Eric Gordon, Terrence Ross, maybe Davis Bertans, Malik Monk, all these guys are going to be able to hit, two and a half, three threes per game. So your Buddy Hield, do you need to take a Bam Adebayo and Eric Bledsoe for some more assists and steals, Bam for his rebounds and blocks, Jonas Valanciunas for the same reason? So once again, Buddy Hield's going to be in a really good spot this year and going to have a really strong season, but his threes in the top 50, and that's why I never own Clay Thompson, because his category, his best category, you can find later on in drafts.
Yeah, exactly. That is a key point. And again, it just harkens back to this point of going by a ranking number is quite disingenuous. It's quite misleading in terms of where that overall value lies. And you can come in and tell me Buddy Hield was the 45th best player by a ranking number. That doesn't mean that he is a smart pick necessarily at 45. And we love what Buddy can do. And he doesn't just give you threes. He's a 20-point per game guy, which is valuable. So that we talked about the scarcity of points and you add that into the abundance of three. So which one of those evens it up? Well, that's why he is that guy that's a 50 to 60 type player and not a player that falls down further. He does it efficiently, which is another boost in his favor to be able to do all that efficiently. So that's why he's not the guy that's 120th like Terrence Ross, is because he brings these other values alongside the threes. Landry Shamet might average 2.5 threes per game, but he's nowhere near where Hield is because he's not a 20-point per game guy. He's not doing it on 48%, 49% shooting. These all things tie in, but it does. You do have to look at those things. And it is just about, people often say to me, Josh, I've got pick one, so who do I target at pick 48? Well, I cannot give you that answer for a start, because you've got to see, how's this draft gone? Which guys, has there been a run on point guards? Did you just see Conley, Levine, Fox, Mitchell, Simmons, Doncic, and Walker all go in a 10-spot run? And then you go, shit, what am I going to do? Or where am I getting my point guards? Because if that happened, then you've got to make sure, you've got to reach forward. Maybe you do have to even take a Ja Morant there, because hey, how the hell else are you going to get assist? Do I have to take Shea there? Do I have to take Rubio? Look, what do I have to do? So trying to plan out five spots in advance or five picks in advance when the draft hasn't even started is going to pigeonhole you into these are my targets at this spot. You have to be flexible. You have to be able to see the way the draft is going, what categories are running off the board. You get to pick 48. Are there 10 good centers left? Is Bam still there? Is Tom Bryant still there? Is Aldridge still there? Is Mitch Robinson still there? Is Derek Favors still there? Is Julius Randle? Is Hassan Whiteside? Because you could have 10 good centers that you might be able to circle back onto your next pick and assume two or three of those guys can fit through. So it is really important to see the way that people are viewing your draft and how the picks have gone in advance before making those pronouncements, before making those plans, because otherwise, again, you will get it wrong if you're just pigeonholing yourself in there and if you're not making those sort of decisions or understanding the way that the stats do run off the board in that in those early rounds and where those stats tend to run off.
Yeah, spot on. I don't really have much more to add than that, but I was just going to say that, yeah, so with the article that I wrote, after the top 60 players have been drafted, like I said, points extremely difficult to find, rebounds are tough to find, assists are tough to find. The most readily available categories are field goal percentage. So we know like guys like JaVale McGee, Kevon Looney, Jakob Poeltl, these sort of guys relate. Who I mentioned with, you know, Terrence Ross, Eric Gordon, Bertans, Malik Monk, JJ Redick, et cetera. So, yeah, once again, I think in those first sort of five rounds, you really need to be targeting your guards with the assists and steals and your bigs with the rebounds and blocks. And obviously points if you can get them.
Look, there are guys, and this has never been the case really in many years past, that you can find these big percentage influencers late. Kevon Looney, a guy you mentioned, but even free throws. Yeah, Jeremy Lamb, you can get in the 90s. TJ Warren's a good field goal percentage guy that can influence that category. Dario Saric is a free throw percentage influencer. If someone like Malik Monk gets minutes, Colin Sexton, he can influence that category. You've got a guy, Poeltl, who bumps your field goal percentage up. So they can be adjusted. Now, often these guys at the end of drafts will give you strength in one percentage and a weakness in the other, which is something you have to pay attention to. And it is often why I like to disregard one percentage category in drafts, because you're balancing both of those can often be at the detriment of some of those counting stats, which again are harder to find later on, especially when we're talking about the points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks numbers, which do tend to go off the boards. But it is important. And we talk about steals, Matt, of being something that lasts, and they do. But once you get, like, rebounds to 110, 120, then the steals are gone. Then there are no high steals guys in that area of the draft. The steals seem to be concentrated in this 60 to 100 type range. Yeah, Bridges and Oubre. Steven Adams is a high steals guy. Marcus Smart in that area. DeLon Wright in that area. Maximum Derek White, another guy in that area. But they all come off the board. And then you're looking for a guy that gives you steals, and there just aren't many of them around. Yeah, when we get later into the draft, Thad Young's value probably, or steal output probably drops this season. There just aren't that many guys there. So it is important to know the groupings. And if we were going to go through it, Matt, I'd say we get points early. Agreed?
Agreed. Yep.
You get assists next is probably the next way you got to look at it. Then you go for say, rebounds and blocks. And then steals. Yep. And all of these guys will influence percentage categories as we go. But that tends to be the way we look at it. Points, assists, rebounds, blocks, steals, and then threes later on. That tends to be the order that we should be attacking those things to try and have a successful draft. And you might be looking at draft tracking, shit, look at my numbers here. They're really low here. But you have to have that understanding. Well, I can get my threes back up later. I can help my percentage later on. I can get my steals in round seven. I can start to influence those categories in different areas of the draft. Whereas you get to round eight and you're picking at 100, you cannot get the assist. You just cannot recover unless you fully believe that Tyus Jones is going to play 30 minutes tonight. Actually, he's looked pretty good in the preseason, and I think he's going to play alongside Ja Morant quite a bit, because their shooting guard rotation in Memphis is, as they would say, Matt, not good. So I think we can see a little bit of Tyus Jones playing alongside Ja Morant. So I think that gives you a fairly decent overlook at categorical scarcity, how to implement it into your drafts, and understanding that you're going off a ranking list, which I cannot stress this enough. I've said it so many times, but I cannot say it enough times, that if you just go off that rankings list, you will end up losing. Is it, Matt, before we go, we've got a couple of minutes left here, anything of interest of note that surprised you in preseason? I did a bit of a wrap-up on preseason yesterday. I'll talk about a couple of other things here, but anything that's really surprised you in the preseason so far?
not surprise me as such. I think everyone's getting a little bit excited. Yes, it's great that basketball's back, but a lot of teams are still playing around with rotations. Like we saw Chris Dunn start at point guard for the Chicago Bulls the other game. Thomas Satoransky will start in game two. So we just need to be a little bit careful around rotations. And Derek White, I think, was the other one yesterday who came off the bench in San Antonio. I don't think we need to panic just yet. Obviously, Miles Bridges, I really liked what he's been able to do early for the Charlotte Hornets. PJ Washington as well. There's a chance later on in the season that he starts at centre over Cody Zeller.
We know that Zeller's going to miss time. I think that's a guarantee, pretty much. So I think he will get an opportunity. That's probably easier for him to play into a role at centre versus the role at power forward where Marvin Williams and Miles Bridges are going to get the majority of the minutes. Over Billy Hernan Gomez, over Bismack Biyombo, should be pretty easy for him to slide into that role there. And I can see him starting games this season at the centre position, even though he's only 6'8".
You know, we've had some good signs so far from Thomas Bryant and Bam Adebayo as well. So that's all going to be a really nice Tyler Hero in Miami. He looks like a really good late round flyer as well.
Just on Hero, because a lot of people are asking me about it. Look, he went out and hit his first six shots yesterday, which is obviously not going to stick. He was a 54% shooter overall. He had 18 points in 24 minutes. It was on a 26% usage. So there are a couple of things there. He's not going to be a 54% shooter. We know that. He's not going to have a 26% usage, because if you believe he's going to have a 26% usage, then you also have to believe that Jimmy Butler's going to have a 17% usage and Goran Dragic is going to have a 14% usage, because that's how that game played out. So I don't think we should look at one game usage and go, he's going to get all these shots. That means we believe Chris Silva's going to have a 31% usage, because he actually went out and had 16 and 9 in just 14 minutes with two steals and two blocks. And while Hero was good, he hit a nice, sexy-looking step back. He played some extra minutes. I don't think he's going to be leading the team in field goal attempts, which he did in this game, and he's definitely not going to come out and hit his first six shots in a row. He is a great free-throw shooter that hasn't yet translated into three-point shooting numbers. It didn't in college. It didn't in summer league. But because he's a guy that's so super confident and jacks up a lot of shots, people get really excited. Fine as a late-round pick, but I just think that upside for him is limited. I'll give you this, Matt. Do you think he's a 12 points per game guy, over or under?
That's a good one. For the season, I'll probably take post All-Star break. Well, there's going to be times when Deion Waiters and Jimmy Butler are injured and miss time, and Tyler Hero is going to step into that role, and he'll probably average 14 points per game. And I think he'll have stretches where he's really useful. But the line of 12 points per game is a really good one. And I was just going to say that, from my sons, I think Ricky Rubio is going to have a really positive impact on this team. And DeAndre Ayton looked pretty good early on. And I think, Ayton's going to have a pretty big season and sort of flying under the radar a little bit there in the late second, early third round as well. So, he's another player I really like.
Yeah, I think I think you can have a look at him as a top 20 guy. Like, you don't necessarily have to take him there, as we mentioned, but he's in that sort of a discussion. And I wouldn't be letting Ayton fall out of round two, really. But again, that it's going to come down to what do you want to do with assists there? Because again, he's not providing those assist numbers. Him and John Collins in that sort of mix, I would have Ayton over Collins, which seems to be literally the most common question I've been asked this preseason is, do you have Ayton or Collins? I don't know why that is the question that I continually get asked, but it is, and I do have Ayton ahead of Collins. In that situation, Matt, I reckon we'll let you go from there. Tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and anything else you want to let us know about.
Twitter at S-Man Sports. So, hopefully got a lot of good information. Just gives you a new perspective on how to look at your draft and where to find certain categories. If you have any questions, hit us up on Twitter and we'll, endeavour to answer them in 180 characters or whatever it is these days.
280, I think. All right, Matt is, go follow him on Twitter. Check us out on Basketball Monster, of course. Follow me at @RedRock_Beeble and on Instagram @ Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, leave a comment. Do all of those great things, guys. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Ja Morant.